This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Russia accuses Ukraine of shelling Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, saying Kiev and its Western backers are responsible for any damage to the plant. US President Joe Biden roundly turns down Ukraine's call to brand Russia a state of sponsor of terrorism, saying it would be counterproductive. And a new report says a Saudi woman recently sent to jail for 45 years was sentenced for using Twitter to post, challenge the king's. Hello and welcome to World News. It's 5:30 a.m. at our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, the UN chief Antonio Guterres calls for the establishment of a demilitarized perimeter around the Russian-held Zaporizhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine.
As a first step, Russian and Ukrainian forces must commit not to engage in any military activity towards the plant site or from the plant site. Zaporizhia facility and its surroundings must not be a target or a platform for military operations. As a second step, an agreement on a demilitarized perimeter should be secured. Specifically, that would include a commitment by Russian forces to withdraw all military personnel and equipment from that perimeter, and the commitment by Ukrainian forces not to move into it.
Guterres was speaking at a UN Security Council meeting. He said he was gravely concerned about the situation in and around the plant, which is the biggest in Europe. He sounded the alarm that any damage to the plant could spell catastrophe, not only for the immediate vicinity, but for the region and beyond. Earlier, the International Atomic Energy Agency issued a report on the plant situation, saying there is an urgent need to establish a security protection zone there. Meanwhile, Russia's ambassador to the UN expressed regret to the IAEA report, did not blame Kiev for shelling the site.
We regret that in your report on the safeguards implementation in Ukraine since April to September of this year, the source of shelling is not directly named. We do understand your position as a head of an international regulator, but in the current situation, it's very important to call things by their name.
The Russian envoy warned the site could face serious consequences if the Ukrainian side continues its provocations. He said the responsibility for any damage totally lies with Kiev and its Western backers. Western powers voiced dismay at his remarks, saying the fundamental issue was Russia's occupation of the plant. The site has seen heavy shelling recently, with both Russia and Ukraine accusing each other for the bombings. It was temporarily shut down on Monday. U.S. President Joe Biden has roundly turned down Ukraine's call to brand Russia a state of terrorism, saying it would be counterproductive. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre also said a terrorism designation for Russia would hamper aid delivery to parts of Ukraine. She said it might also prevent implementation of a UN-brokered deal to ship grain from Ukraine's blockaded ports. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky has called on Western countries to formally label Russia a terrorist state. French President Emmanuel Macron in June also explicitly ruled out the label. Last week, news broke out that an ordinary Saudi woman has been handed a 45-year prison term for her social media posts. Now, court documents show the reason was her tweets challenging the king and crown prince. The sentencing documents provided to AFP by a Washington-based rights group says Noor al-Ghatani has been charged with using Twitter to challenge the religion and justice of King Salman and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Ghatani had an anonymous account with fewer than 600 followers. The harsh sentence has drawn swift international condemnations. Last month, the kingdom sentenced another woman to 34 years in prison for her Twitter activities. The woman, Salma al-Shahab, was charged with assisting dissidents who seek to disrupt public order and destabilize civil and national security. Shahab had frequently tweeted about women's rights in the kingdom. There have been no comments from the Saudi government so far. Israel has carried out fresh missile strikes on Syria, this time targeting an airport in the Arab country's second largest city, Aleppo. One missile reportedly hit Aleppo International Airport, damaging its runway. Syrian air defenses, however, managed to intercept several incoming missiles over the city. Last week, Israel targeted the same airport with missiles, causing some material damage in its vicinity. The regime frequently carries out missile strikes on Syria. Damascus has time and again warned against the aggression and has lodged official complaints with the UN and other international bodies. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says Tehran is bent on expanding cooperation with Latin American countries in view of their vast potentialities. Raisi made the remarks in a meeting with Venezuelan President's special envoy Ramon Velasquez. He said Iran's foreign policy gives priority to boosting trade and economic relations with friendly countries. Raisi said Iran is ready to upgrade its relations with Venezuela in all areas, especially in trade, energy, technology, and defense sectors. The Venezuelan official, for his part, called for further expansion of interactions between the two countries. Two-time former President Luiz Ignacio Lula da Silva is now known for managing an economy which resulted in significant poverty alleviation and improved conditions for the most historically marginalized communities of Brazil. From Northeast Brazil, Camila Escalante reports.
Growing up in poverty is among the many things distinguishing presidential candidate Luiz Ignacio Lula da Silva from his opponents. The difficulties he and his family faced from a young age undoubtedly influenced his policymaking during his government. The former president's cousin took us to visit the small clay house Lula lived in until he was seven, located in the rural area outside of Garanhuns in the northeastern state of Pernambuco.
So the shack next door here, which built in a very simple way, was once the home of our President Lula, along with his mother, his father, and his seven brothers and sisters before he emigrated to São Paulo, naturally to save of hunger.
Conditions in this part of the countryside were difficult. There was no running water, and it was only around 2006, under Lula's presidency, that rainwater collection systems were built in this and many other communities.
In 1952, I would have to go out to get water. I had to go 18 kilometers on a donkey to get 4 jugs of water every morning. I'd leave at 2 or 3 in the morning and would be gone until 6 or 7 a.m. with the 4 containers of water, with the donkeys all dying of thirst.
Despite the Workers' Party's advances on economic rights, poverty alleviation, eradicating hunger, and in bridging inequality generally, conditions are now deteriorating under the neoliberal government of Jair Bolsonaro.
Today we live in a similar fashion, but things improved after Lula became president. Every house around here that didn't have a rainwater cistern has two of them now, and that has helped the people a lot to be able to work. It helped against poverty. Through the banks, it gave credit to poor people, and that is how Brazil got better. And now with Bolsonaro, things are getting as bad as back in 1952, when Lula left this area.
It's candidate Lula da Silva, who many working-class Brazilians are saying they identify with most. Camila Escalante, Pernambuco.
As Britain's new PM officially takes up her post following a meeting with the Queen, accusations of a plot by her predecessor, Boris Johnson, are already circulating around. With severe economic crisis and the threat of rival revolts, does Truss have what it takes to take the top post? Robert Carter reports from London.
Finally, after weeks of divisive debates and bitter infighting, Britain's ruling Conservative Party has elected a new leader, Liz Truss, who also goes on to become the next Prime Minister, ending a power vacuum at number 10, which led to public fear and economic uncertainty. Truss was officially appointed after meeting Queen Elizabeth II at Balmoral Tuesday morning. Her predecessor, Boris Johnson, had earlier issued his final speech outside Number 10 ahead of resigning his post.
This is it, folks. Thank you, everybody, for coming out so early this morning. In only a couple of hours, I will be in Balmoral to see Her Majesty the Queen. And the torch will finally be passed to a new Conservative leader.
Truss has secured the faith of the Tory membership. However, polling suggests the Conservatives have lost favour with the wider electorate. But Truss supporters believe she has what it takes to turn things around.
Liz Truss wasn't responsible for the mess that the country's now in. Indeed, Rishi Sunak, her rival as Chancellor of the Exchequer, he was behind many of the policies which involved an increase in the national insurance, basically a tax on jobs, and of course inflationary policies that have exacerbated the crisis that Britain is currently in. So Liz Truss will be a new broom that will come in and perhaps sweep up the mess that Rishi Sunak and Boris Johnson, her predecessor as Prime Minister, created.
Allegations have been spread of a possible plan by Boris on returning to power, agitating from the backbenches to undermine Truss's leadership, as he did under David Cameron and Theresa May.
Boris Johnson, to be honest, I met him and he is like unpredictable. He can do anything. I think at the moment he will be away for a while, but he must have a plan. Always he have a plan. Boris, he like stay for a little while, then he have something else. So he's not going to stop for sure.
Truss's first big challenge will be dealing with the cost of living crisis. She's pledged a clear plan within a week, with expectations of a cap freeze on energy bills. But winter looms and bills remain eye-wateringly high.
Even before Truss took office, speculation has swirled regarding whether she has what it takes or not to save the economy, fight off backbench criticism, and also to hold on to power for the Conservatives in a general election, the next being scheduled for January 2025, meaning that Truss will have to make a meaningful impact and quickly in order to hold on to her position at number 10 for the long term. Robert Carter, London.
The United States is at warp speed when it comes to weapon sales. Lately, Washington has approved potential sales of $1.1 billion worth of arms to Taiwan amid heightened tensions with Beijing. Now, a new report indicates that the U.S. seeks to expedite its arms sales to allies to better compete with the countries like China.
The largest contributor to the vast sums of money spent on defense and arms each year is the United States military. The U.S. led the ranking of countries with highest military spending in 2021, with $801 billion U.S. dollars dedicated to the military. That constituted 38% of the total military spending worldwide that year, which totaled to $2.1 trillion U.S. dollars. In essence, the U.S. government is the world's largest arms dealer, with all the responsibility that that entails. The Center for Civilians in Conflict underscored this point in its January 2018 report, with great power modifying U.S. arms sales to reduce civilian harm, which provided a series of practical recommendations on how to avoid situations in which U.S. arms fall into the wrong hands or become associated with corruption, human rights abuses, violations of the laws of war and human suffering. However, current U.S. policy continues to fall short by all of these measures. Selling arms to Saudi Arabia to be used in Yemen for killing civilians and American weapons ending up in the hands of Al-Qaeda terrorists are some instances. Now, a Wall Street Journal report says the Pentagon has launched a wide-ranging push to expedite sales of U.S. arms, including drones, guns, helicopters, tanks, and other weaponry to foreign allies in an effort to better compete with China and refill the arsenals of friendly nations that have given military gear to Ukraine. The Pentagon last month created a task force of senior officials to examine long-standing inefficiencies in U.S. sales of billions of dollars of weaponry to foreign countries. The so-called Tiger Team will look at ways for the Defense Department to streamline parts of the program, according to a senior defense official, with the aim of putting American weapons into partners' and allies' hands faster. The United States promised European allies who have provided military equipment to Ukraine that it would be able to replenish their stocks. But the U.S. defense industry is facing a backlog. Meanwhile, the European Union's foreign policy chief says member states are running low on weapons because of the scale of arms deliveries to Ukraine.
28 hours before.
Before taking office, U.S. President Joe Biden announced that his administration would not check its values at the door to sell arms. But the value of U.S. arms sales notifications for 2022 is rising again and has already surpassed the previous year. So as Biden fulfilled his campaign pledge to shift his country's policy on arms sales.
Joe Biden's biggest claim in the 2020 election campaign was to restore America's global position with an interactive approach and expand cooperation with other countries. However, contrary to his pacifist election slogans, Joe Biden has appeared more as a broker of violence. Washington has increased military aid and arms sales to Taiwan, Japan, and South Korea under the pretext of confronting China at the same time as reviving American military exercises with these countries. Japan is considering deploying 1,000 long-range cruise missiles to strengthen its counterattack capability against China. South Korea has also demanded an increase in military and weapons support from the United States, while at the request of the United States, Seoul and Tokyo participated in the NATO summit for the first time. AUKUS agreement with Australia in the form of building a nuclear submarine for this country, along with increasing military cooperation with the claim of countering China's movements and maritime security, also forms another dimension of the U.S. militarism. As of August, government-to-government arms sale offers have already reached $57 billion. In other words, there is no wholesale reversal on arms sales under the Biden administration, in volume or value, nor with regard to the human rights records of recipients. In addition to deepening internal differences, Biden has actually intensified the atmosphere of tension on the world stage, which can be seen in the war in Ukraine, the crisis in Taiwan, and the American tension in West Asia. These behaviors of the Democratic tenant of the White House have raised the question in the public mind. Is Joe Biden's mission to restore American global integration, or is he a utilitarian broker of violence?
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
When the term de-dollarization was coined, there was a concrete idea behind it, that the U.S. currency would be uncrowned someday. And when we talk about the U.S. decline, we cannot avoid talking about de-dollarization and the end of dollar hegemony in the world. Believe it or not, the world is going to be multipolar as world economies are exhausted by the U.S. military and financial bullying. So, efforts are underway to topple the dollar. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media to know more views and attitudes. Stay with us, please. Asia Times website had recently this headline saying, China-Russia currency alliance shows the way to de-dollarization. Asia Times wrote, growing yuan-ruble trade is a prototype arrangement that could be replicated on a larger scale with more vital economies. 2 years ago this month, China's Xi Jinping and Russia's Vladimir Putin agreed to a financial alliance. It won little attention at the time. The pact to reduce their economy's dependence on the dollar seemed more aspirational, more rhetorical than tangible. Until now, as economist Ivan Teshakrov at Citigroup reports, yuan trading at the Moscow exchange, Russia's largest, has surged more than 40-fold this year. What's more, he notes, yuan dealing has now started to dominate trading in more traditional currencies. This is happening against the backdrop of fast declining trading in the US dollar. It would be intellectually dishonest to argue things unfolded exactly as Xi and Putin expected in August 2020. The website of Press TV also wrote, while there is a decline in Washington's standing as a superpower, the U.S. is facing another harsh reality. The decline of the U.S. dollar as it falls from international grace one country at a time. All indicators show the amount of U.S. dollar held in reserves by non-U.S. central banks has fallen to its lowest level. The United States of America, the most indebted nation ever, also has a sovereign debt crisis, another sign that we may be heading toward the collapse of the U.S. dollar. The weaponization of the U.S. dollar, not to mention the imposition of U.S. sanctions on perceived adversaries, has made other countries wary of utilizing the greenback in their financial transactions. Thus, countries such as Iran, Russia, and China are moving towards the elimination of dollar altogether. The Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Alexander Pankin has said against the growing geopolitical pressure from the collective West, the only way to guarantee stable trade, economic and investment ties between Russia and its partners is to avoid the dollar and the euro and switch to settlements in acceptable alternatives, primarily in national currencies. Deputy Foreign Minister Pankin highlights the growing geopolitical pressure from the West, combined with sanctions from the U.S. and its European allies due to Russia's special military operation in Ukraine. However, heavy sanctions have been used against Russia since 2014, long before Ukraine's special military operation. The de-dollarization move was fast-tracked when the U.S. Treasury Department decided to confiscate Russia's U.S. dollar foreign exchange reserves. This has caused other countries to reconsider keeping their financial reserves in U.S. dollar and to conclude that their country could be the next to be harassed and vilified if it does not abide by U.S. foreign policy. They could face secondary sanctions at the very least. Therefore, it was a natural progression for countries like Russia, China, and Iran to trade with their own national currencies. According to the Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Alexander Pankin, mechanisms for international settlement in national currencies rather than Western currencies, have been successfully created with a number of nations and the possibility of paying in rubles for certain categories of Russian export goods, including energy and food products, has been set up. The BRICS, the SCO, as well as many other international organizations have intensified their multilateral discourse on the subject, which is highly significant since the U.S. has fallen out of favor with so many countries, most of which are gravitating eastwards or away from the United States. Take the case of Brazil as an example. The presidential candidate, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, has recommended using a Latin American currency in order to be free of the U.S. dollar. Lula da Silva has pledged many times that do not involve the U.S. or the U.S. dollar, such as strengthening its relations with all Latin American countries, vowing to revive the BRICS system, integrating Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa in an independent economic architecture to challenge Western financial hegemony. The BRICS group of nations has also been discussing the development of a BRICS-specific multilateral wallet and currency.
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone, and let us ponder this maxim on faith in Almighty from the Holy Prophet's seventh infallible successor, Imam Musa Kazem, peace be upon him. Fear God and say the truth, even if it will cause you to perish, for your salvation lies in telling the truth. Fear God and leave the wrong, even if it will save you, for your perdition lies in telling the wrong.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, conditions of ordering for good and stopping from evil. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the conditions of ordering for good and stopping from evil. In these conditions, the first condition is that there must be a coordination in the speech and behavior of the person who is performing this obligation. And he cannot perform this if he does not have these characteristics in it. The first characteristics or the first condition is that there must be a coordination. He must practically do something, and what he is practically performing, he can call people towards that. And practically from the things which he is stopping himself, he can stop them from such an evil. So this is one of the conditions, and this is very important, because when there's a coordination between speech and behavior of a person, people listen to such a person. Such a person is known as a truthful person. He is known as Sadiq, which is being known, obviously we know that this has been said to the Prophet as well, that he was Sadiq, he was truthful. Why? Because what he used to say, he has proven that he practically used to do that. And there is an example, obviously, if someone knows or reads in the book, like how to make a table, this reading the book and knowing the procedure of making a table does not make him a carpenter, does not make him a specialist. He becomes a specialist, he becomes a carpenter when he practically applied the knowledge that he had in his practical life and he performs it by just saying and telling people. By just reading and telling people does not make him a carpenter or a specialist. Therefore, he must perform it practically. He must make a table so that he can prove that practically he knows how to make a table. And later, when he tells that this procedure to the people, people accept his wordings. People accept his wordings. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of conditions of calling for good and forbidding evil. We said that the first condition is that there must be a coordination in speech and behavior of a person. And this is very important that whoever is trying to perform such an obligation and calling people towards the good and forbidding them from evil, he must practically do that by himself. He must have a coordination of what he says with what he practices. And we gave the example of a carpenter, for example. If someone, we want to say that he's a carpenter, by just telling the procedure of making a table or chair or wooden works, it does not make a person a carpenter. We say person is a carpenter, we accept it, then we see that he practically performs such a thing. And later when he says us, he tells us about the procedure, we accept his wordings. There is another example which has been given by late Shahid Mutahhari, a great scholar, Islamic scholar. He says that every muslih, the reformer, must be reformed. He must reform himself before reforming others. And he gives an example that, for example, if there is a commander in the army and if he just orders others, the soldiers, to go to the front line and he never goes there, he never stands with them, these soldiers will never go in the front line. Obviously, they will never have the courage of doing that. But if he steps forward and he calls them to follow him, that is the time when everyone, every single soldier will follow him with the high love of that, we can say like the commander. And this makes them someone who is calling them. And similarly, we can see that the prophets, they were practically worshiping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and then calling people towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
Tehran's Saray Gallery takes part in a massive art exhibition in South Korea, bringing Iran's leading and emerging artist to the Asian market. Works from six Iranian painters are displayed at the event, where hundreds of galleries account for more than $50 million in sales annually. Frank Smith reports from Seoul.
Seoul's annual global art exhibition has been reinvigorated this year with additional events and a most certain boost in attendance. The Korea International Art Fair continues an evolution that began with its launch back in 2002. This year features 164 galleries and more international exhibitors than ever before. That growing cosmopolitan experience and this region's growth as an art market hub is what brought a premier Iranian gallery to Seoul.
When we start this gallery, we had the big goal to just introduce Middle Eastern artists and Iranian artists to all over the world. So when you want to introduce artists, you cannot forget South Korea and Far East as well.
Sarai had participated in last year's art fair with paintings purchased by local Korean collectors. Expanding on that success at the event and as Iranian artists are growing in international stature, Hassan Saradipour decided to display works from six Iranian artists at this year's event.
Our gallery focuses on the established and emerging artists. This artist, Abbas Nasashamlu, he just want to show that how the nature and how the human can affect to each other, how this experience he can bring it on the canvas, on the paper.
The massive exhibition featured paintings, although there were various multimedia and sculpture installations. As South Korean living standards have risen, more people have time and money to spend on such events. Their taste in art has also become more sophisticated.
South Korea used to lack art galleries compared to other countries. There was a serious lack of love for this level of culture. However, now these events, I think, create opportunities for more people to gain such appreciation.
For the first time this year, Freeze Art Fair in Seoul exhibited works from 110 galleries, including Picasso, other 20th century masters, and contemporary talents. Frank Smith, Seoul.
An Iranian movie wins the grand prize for the best film in this year's Moscow International Film Festival. In its international debut, No Prior Appointment won the Best Film and the Best Actress awards. The movie is a product of Farabi Cinema Foundation and directed by Behruz Shoaibi in Iran in 2021. It is the story of a girl named Yasaman who returns to Iran from Germany after her father's death. A short stay in her father's hometown and meeting those who know him leads her to a new understanding of humans and the concept of death. The 44th edition of the Moscow International Film Festival was held this year from September 4 to 11. Animals, no matter pets or wild, are more vulnerable to drowning or dying in resulting floods and mudslides. A veterinarian school in Pakistan is offering free treatment for animals injured in the recent devastating floods. The veterinary surgery department of Sindh Agriculture University has set up a makeshift animal hospital as flooding hit humans and animals alike in the surrounding area. Volunteers have been providing anything from surgery to medicine and even ultrasounds to the animals free of cost. People from flood-affected areas can be seen bringing their farm animals such as goats, donkeys, buffaloes, and cows into the center.
The worst floods in history have killed an estimated 800,000 farm animals. But there were many heartwarming videos trolling on social media showing people come to rescue animals being stuck hopelessly.
Iran is famous for its hand-knotted carpets and ancient art which have been loved for centuries and are never going out of style despite changing tastes and increased competition from Asia. Striking geometric shapes that recall 20th century abstract art are what we expect to see in handmade Iranian rugs. But weavers and exporters have been forced to redesign a tradition dating back more than 2,000 years due to numerous problems. Carpet exporter Ahad Azimzadeh says, however, that a revolution is underway. Iranian rugs are known for dense, curving floral designs in rich colors. They were put on display in a recent exhibition that featured a rug with small squares of hypnotic diagonal blue and white lines and another depicting diamond and other patterns in gold silk. Some countries have overtaken Iran in the global market, but many say modern carpets will never replace the traditional ones, which are deep-rooted in Iranian culture.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
These days, computer technology is impacting every aspect of our life, providing a greater ability to place things, events, and people within context. An Iraqi museum has started using the technology and virtual reality headsets to make exhibits interactive and to bring scenes back to life. Visitors can explore heritage sites destroyed by terrorist groups. Now using thousands of photographs, a group of local engineers have given a virtual rebirth to five historic sites in Mosul and the broader Nineveh province. That includes a mosque and its leaning minaret. But this museum brings sites back to life for the people who live in Mosul. Although large parts of the old city remain oceans of debris, authorities are trying to restore historic sites, mosques and churches in Mosul. A private museum along the Tigris River, which opened in mid-June, saw more than 4,000 visitors in its first month. The floating cinema of unknown waters is back in the Italian city of Venice, and spectators are getting buoyant to reach the annual Open Sea Film Festival. On board a rowing boat, a motorboat, gondolas and whatever capable of floating, spectators sail to the shallows behind the Giudecca Island for this one-of-a-kind cinematic experience. The audience can watch the program from their own boat or a barge with chairs for those without floating transportation. The event consists of a series of screenings, performances and presentations on a floating platform and is held for 12 nights in the Venetian Lagoon.
A new bird species has been discovered on the southernmost islands of the Americas. Biologists are baffled.
Discovering new bird species is very, very difficult and rare because the world has been more focused on observing birds. Therefore, this means the discovery site is unique in the sub-Antarctic zone, on which Chile has important sovereignty. This raises the importance of caring for the environment and unique ecosystems, as these sites will allow us to carry out research on climate change, new species and behaviors.
The tiny bird weighs only 16 grams and has a large beak with black and yellow streaks along its body. Researchers say the animal is a subcategory of a species typically found in the Patagonia forest and inhabits tree trunks. But the newly discovered cousin has surprised scientists as it learned to burrow and live in a harsh tundra climate with bitter temperatures. the Diego Ramirez archipelago, where the bird was found, is an isolated bit of land. It also lacks mammalian predators and woody plants. Biologists and researchers from Chilean universities and various academic centers studied the birds for 6 years before announcing the new species. The next moonshot is finally getting closer. NASA says it's ready to test its next-generation rocket ship on an epic launch set for August the 29th as part of its mission to send people to the moon.
This new deep space exploration system is going to take us back to the moon and to new science discoveries that we can't even imagine yet. NASA is about to make history with this first flight of the Artemis program.
The mega rocket combines the Space Launch System, or SLS, and the Orion crew capsule it will carry to space. The rocket is due to blast off for a test drive from the U.S. base Kennedy Space Center, sending an empty crew capsule around the moon and back to the Earth. The Artemis 1 test flight is planned to take 6 weeks. It's meant to rigorously stress the systems to determine whether the vehicle is ready to safely carry astronauts. The program aims to establish a long-term lunar colony as a stepping stone to the even more ambitious future voyages that will send people to Mars. The SLS represents the biggest new vertical launch system NASA has built since those flown in the 1960s and 70s. This story will tell you about what could be the bright side of climate change, and that's the discovery of dinosaur tracks dating back to 113 million years ago. The tracks were found in the U.S. state of Texas, where drought has dried up parts of Paluxy River. Experts say the tracks belong to a two-legged dinosaur with small arms and weighing 7 tons. They say dinosaurs made the prints as they roamed muddy areas over 100 million years ago. The prints were then covered over with sediment due to a flood. And after that, they turned into limestone, protecting the prints. The experts say the tracks have not been seen either before or in decades. Age does not matter, it's the heart that counts. A Guatemalan female footballer has proved that there is no point one should worry about the age. 57-year-old Alma Salazar has a passion for soccer and takes care of her team's goalpost. Known as Flying Granny, she launches herself and deflects a ball that's looking for the nets. The passion for the sport was born when she was 19 years old. She started training with a men's team where she often found a place as a goalkeeper. Since then, Alma has played for several professional and amateur football clubs. In her room that overlooks a local stadium, Alma keeps trophies she has won on a table, most of them as the least defeated goalkeeper. Locals praise her as an unbeatable goalkeeper. The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture and manufacturing.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Dehlavier missile, its range and anti-armor capabilities. Despite significant advances in both aerial and maritime warfare, the ground war still retains a special significance and plays a decisive role in determining the outcome of modern warfare. In this program, we will take a look at a new Iranian-built missile with an impressive range and anti-armor capabilities, the Dehlavie missile. Please stay with us. Military hardware which can play a decisive role in ground warfare includes tanks, armored personnel carriers, and armored vehicles. Thus, missiles which can penetrate armored vehicles and tanks, destroying them, are of special significance in ground warfare. As technology advances and more formidable tanks and armored personnel carriers are built, so too more sophisticated and deadly missiles with armor-piercing capabilities are being developed. A new generation of armor-piercing missiles have been developed with powerful warheads and the ability to be guided to their target from a long distance away. One such missile is the Iranian-built Dehlavie missile, which, considering its armor-penetrating capabilities, is classified as one of the most powerful anti-armor missiles of its kind in the world. Stay with us for a brief look at the state-of-the-art, armor-piercing, Iranian-built missile. The Dehlavie missile is a guided anti-armor missile which has been developed by Iran's Defense Industries Corps, which is part of Iran's Defense Ministry. The missile was officially unveiled at a ceremony on 8th of July 2012, presided over by Iran's Defense Minister at the time, Brigadier General Ahmad Vahidi. The missile's name, Dehlavie, is derived from the place where Dr. Mustafa Chamran was martyred. Dr. Mustafa Chamran was an Iranian scientist who served as the first defense minister of the Islamic Republic of Iran after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, and he was also a member of the Iranian parliament, the Majlis. The Dehlavie missile has many similarities to the Russian armor-piercing Kornet missile and is considered to be one of Iran's most powerful armor-penetrating missiles. In recent years, the missile has become operational and has been used by both the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, and the Iranian army. According to data provided by Iran's defense ministry, the missile has an effective range of between 100 to 5,500 meters. The Dehlavia missile has a very modern laser guidance system, which makes it resistant to all kinds of electronic warfare measures. According to former defense minister, Brigadier General Ahmad Vahidi, the missile has a very powerful warhead. It has the ability to penetrate thick armor. It is propelled by a powerful rocket engine, and it is light enough so that it can be carried by individuals on the battlefield. All these characteristics make the Dehlavia missile a unique, powerful, and effective weapon of war. The Dehlavia missile has been tested and proven to be effective against all sorts of tanks and armored personnel carriers. The missile can also be used against all moving and stationary armored targets, as well as helicopters and even vessels at sea. Thus, just like the Tufan, the Tundar, and the Tusan family of missiles, which have also been developed by Iran's defense ministry, the Dehlavia missile should also be considered as a multi-purpose missile. The Dehlavia missile has a total weight of 22.7 kilograms and its warhead weighs 6.8 kilograms. The warhead is a two-stage warhead with the ability to penetrate 1,200 millimeters of hard armor. The range of the missile is reduced to 3,500 meters if a night vision system is used for launching the missile. Also, in a special ceremony in July of 2021, a new, more powerful and deadly version of the Dehlavia missile was unveiled in a parade of the IRGC forces. The new missile has an improved range of 8 kilometers and can penetrate 1,300 millimeters of hard armor. And just like its older model, it is laser guided. The older version of the Dehlavia missile is coded 1M133M9, and the new version of the Dehlavia missile is coded 2M133M9. The missile has a speed of 250 meters per second.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and welcome to the latest edition of Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. The leader of the British Labour Party, Sir Keir Starmer, has been conducting a witch hunt against pro-Palestine members of his own party. His notoriously pro-Israel views are well known, but today we'll be looking at Sir Keir's relationship with a little-known but influential law firm called Mishkan Diriya. As always, I'll be speaking to experts on this issue to delve into the background to this story. But before we get into that discussion, here's Bianca Rahimi with an investigation about the role of Mishkan Diriya in pro-Israel lobbying.
Mishkan Diriya is a law and lobbying firm based in London and Singapore. It is a vast operation, including over 600 lawyers. It generates hundreds of millions of pounds of profit.